You know what I've gotten to catch on, though?
A little out of practice.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
It's all right. I think he's passe, but, you know.
He's not passe at all. He just got just got his new feud started, and I'm pretty pumped about it. Two of my absolute favorites, LA Knight and Shinsuke Nakamura, and going with the anime bad guy ninja vibe. Subscribe. Yeah! I'm all in. Final hour of the show coming up. Tiger Pal Rachel texts the show, 71307. Start your text with Fan F-A-N, Fan F-A-N. We'll read them on the air. Tiger Pal Rachel said, what would it say if Texas wins the SEC, Oregon wins the Big Ten, and SMU wins the ACC?
You know, between the two of us, we've predicted that already. At the beginning of the season.
So. I did not predict Texas to win the SEC. Did you?
Yes.
Okay. And you picked SMU.
Right.
To win the ACC.
And you picked Oregon.
And I picked Oregon to win the Big Ten.
Yeah. So we were already looking that direction before the season started.
Yeah. So we know that I'll tell you what. Let me see if I can find the, I didn't pull the audio from it, but I thought it was interesting. Let me see if I can find it. But Heather Denich put up a TikTok reel that explains the effectively using the last college football playoff rankings. She put up a TikTok reel that effectively explains how the rankings would work. And how the seeding would work. Because I think a lot of people are still a little bit confused about how that would play out. So basically, right now, it's actually Boise State that would catch a bye. The Big 12 champ, which in this case looks like Colorado, actually. The Big 12 champ could be in danger of missing out on the bye. The assumption has kind of always been that the Power Four would be the four conference champs that catch a bye, and that the Group of Five or whatever champ would have to play in the first round despite being a conference champion. If the rankings hold true today, and I don't know if they change based on Colorado's achievement in playing in and winning a Big 12 game, likely over a ranked team. I don't know if they would jump Boise State or not. If they don't, Boise State would catch a bye. SMU would catch a bye. And using your hypothetical here, Tiger Pal Rachel, Oregon and Texas would catch a bye. Seeded 1 through 4 as those rankings go. Colorado Big 12 champ would still have to play in the first round. What does that say? I don't know. It says that those four teams won the conference and were ranked as the four highest conference champs. It would say that Colorado unfortunately becomes the victim of a Big 12 that cannibalized itself, is what it would say. That beat itself up week in and week out, as the SEC fans would say. I don't know what it would say outside of that. There's no deeper meaning. The Big 12 did not have a team go undefeated. Again, maybe the Big 12 champ jumps Boise State. I don't know is the answer. The only thing it would say in that point is that once you finished ranking everybody who wasn't one of the first four byes, you've got to leave a slot at number 12. If Boise State is outside of the top 12, you have got to leave a spot at number 12 for Boise State as a or Colorado, if they're not inside the top 12. You've got to leave a spot for them as the next highest ranked conference champion, which we've known from the beginning could be outside of the top 12, right? I think the assumption has been that the Power Four conference champs would all be inside of the top 12. And so therefore, not only would they be the four that catch the bye, but then basically the other eight teams, or nine or 10 or however many there are, that are ranked around them, even if one of them isn't, you know, 1, 2, 3, or 4 in the playoff rankings. The other teams would filter in. Your fifth conference champion would come from probably somewhere inside the top 12. But if they come from outside the top 12, then whoever is in that 12th or 13th or whatever spot is the last one up would get bumped out for that conference champion that's outside of the top 12. And that's not to say we'll never have a Big Ten or an SEC or a Big 12 or an ACC champ. Hell, right now the ACC champ may very well be outside the top 12. And yet also still catch a bye. So, I mean, honestly, like, I listened yesterday to probably like a solid 3 hours of SiriusXM's coverage of college football. And so I must have heard yesterday 1,000 different playoff hypotheticals based on, you know, X beats Y, Z beats A, X beats A, you know, based on Texas A&M, Ohio State, Michigan, the Big Ten championship game, the Big 12 championship game, Colorado versus Kansas at Arrowhead this weekend. I probably heard 1,000 different hypotheticals. And I do think it can be fun to talk about hypotheticals. I think a good chunk of what we do in sports talk radio is talking about hypotheticals. Hell, every time that we project and prognosticate games, we are playing a hypothetical game in our head. The only time that I have a problem with it is when we allow the hypotheticals to be more important than what has actually happened. Go back to last year, the Florida State-Alabama controversy at the end of the year that led to a 13-0 Florida State Power 5 conference champ being left out, the first and only time in the history of the college football playoff that's happened. And the big argument that I used was every time that somebody said, oh, Florida State should be left out because of X, they should be left out because of Y, they should be left out because of Z, I said to them, oh, so you think that a 13-0 Power 5 undefeated conference champion should be left out because of a mental game that you played in your head, not anything that's been done on the field? I just want to make sure I have that straight. And the response that I got most of the time was yes. To which case I said, then why do we play the games at all? If what matters is what you think will happen in your head, not what did happen on the field, why do we play the games? Why do we not simply do our preseason rankings and then we go, okay, we all think that Texas is going to win the SEC. Ohio State's going to win the Big Ten. Colorado's going to win the Big 12. Miami's going to win the ACC, and we all think that the next highest-ranked conference champ is going to be Boise State. And then we think that Team X is going to finish second in the SEC. They'll be ranked number 3, and this team's ranked number this, and that team's ranked number this. Let's just fill out the 12-team bracket without playing. Why would we play the regular season? There's no point to it, right? If that's what matters, if the games that you play in your head are more important than the results on the football field, then let's just get rid of the games. Let's just throw them all in a bracket based on preseason prognostications, because that's what preseason rankings are, right? By definition, none of those teams in the preseason, because it is preseason, have played a season game, what with it being the pre. So why don't we just go, we all make our preseason rankings, we pull them all together, we look at how everybody thinks the conferences are going to shape up and our conference champion predictions and our conference order of finish projections, and we put them all down, and like the AP poll, we assign points. And we put together 250 brackets, and then we just put them down and we go, okay, and here's your 12-team playoff. This is the bracket because the games that you played hypothetically in your head matter more than what happens on the football field. Why don't we do that? We don't do that because the games on the field matter, right? The games on the field matter. And so to kind of circle this thing back around, I think you've got to allow, the games to play out. To tie this into what we were talking about in the last segment, I think Lane Kiffin absolutely has a point in that if I was a two-loss SEC team, I am hoping that we don't get selected by the tiebreaker to be the second participant in the SEC title game. Because in that spot, what inevitably ends up happening is that I've lost my third game, and a bunch of dorks in a room somewhere look at this, and they go, you know, now that they lost to a one-loss SEC team, we think that they would also lose to all these two-loss teams, and you don't get in anymore. I wouldn't want to play it either. So, and again, I think you've got to find a healthy balance of prognostication, a healthy balance of projection, and also taking results on the field into consideration. And if you can't do that, I don't understand how we structure this whole thing. I don't know how. And again, this is why I've said the best thing for discourse in college football would be yesterday, today, whatever day it is, whatever time it is, that the College Football Selection Committee all meet in a hotel ballroom in Dallas, Texas, or wherever they're doing it nowadays. Throw me a camera and a microphone in there. Throw me a camera and a microphone and let these guys and gals explain how they arrived at the decision. Don't do it in the shadows. Explain to us how you arrived at the decision that you arrived at so that we know moving forward. And I am including all the way up to the very last rankings that actually form the bracket. Once you do that, then we can start having discussions amongst the fandom that are educated, which right now they're not. Right now we're totally guessing. Do weighted losses matter more? Part of me says yes. Penn State lost to Ohio State thoroughly, like lost to Ohio State. And it feels to me as if the College Football Playoff Selection Committee looked at that and went, that's a great loss. Well, to dictate to me what a great loss and a good loss and a bad loss is so that I know how to rank those. How does a team with two losses jump significantly over a team with one loss? Oh, strength of schedule. All right, show me what the strength of schedule looks like, right? Like, just tell me more. That's all I've ever asked for. All right, let me get Chris in here before we got to run to a break. Chris has been hanging on kindly and joins the show. Chris, what's up, big dog?
What's happening, gentlemen? Pleasure to chat with you, as always.
As always.
The College Football Playoff Committee made an error, but it was an intentional error early on whenever it was created, because we have to stop and step back and look at the big picture. It was created for one reason and one reason only: to maximize the amount of eyeballs that are on television sets when college football games are played, particularly within a college football playoff format. And so they accomplished that with the error that they committed, but we as a college football fan community are worse off for it. It's because they set the criteria as selecting the four best teams in college football as opposed to selecting the four most deserving teams of playoff spots in college football. By introducing a subjective measure of the best, then you can, exactly like you said before, what's the point in even playing the game? If I think Alabama is better than undefeated Florida State, then I'm going to be able to take Alabama regardless of what their record is. I can create that scenario in my mind because I can always hide behind the illusion of the best. And is Alabama one of the four best teams in the country going into most years? Probably, especially when you look at recruiting rankings, what they're putting out into the NFL. But they actually did go to Vanderbilt and lose. they actually did square off and lose to multiple teams this year. Same thing with Georgia. We can assume that these are good teams, but at some point the results on the field have to matter. And it's exactly what's going on with the pushback against the Big Ten rankings, is that, oh, well, this team's too high because this team did. Listen, if the only mark that you can say about Ohio State is that they can't beat Ohio State, that puts them in the same class as 99.8% of college football. That's just the reality of the situation. Arguably the most talented roster in all of college football this year. And if the only negative thing you can say about it is that, well, they didn't beat the best roster in college football, I think there's a whole bunch of programs that would take that. But it's just gotten in this convoluted, ridiculous spot where we start getting into best versus deserving that creates those shadow environments where arguments are made that make absolutely no sense, and things fly in the face of the very logic that this stooge they put out every Tuesday to give his comments on why they rank teams where, they completely become hypocritical on a week-to-week basis and massage these rankings of what's going to create the most chatter.
Don't disagree. Chris, great to talk to you, buddy. Thanks for checking in. Good to hear from you, as always. Feel free to jump in anytime. First off, and this I did find very interesting, Kirk Herbstreit is off of the college football selection shows on Tuesdays now. He's not doing them anymore. And nobody's given a reason. Kirk didn't give a reason. ESPN didn't give a reason. And I can tell you what the reason is. The reason is, since he was the one that kind of led that, and I like, for the record, I like Kirk Herbstreit a lot. I do. I like him as a dude. I've met him multiple times. He's a great guy. I like what he brings to the table as far as commentary and analysis. I think he is the glue that's holding Thursday night football together. As much as I will defend Al Michaels, Kirk's the one that makes that broadcast work. But Kirk Herbstreit led the charge last year to get Florida State left out. And you will not convince me to the contrary. And I think there has been so much pushback from that, especially this year, where there are a lot of teams that I think their fans feel like they could be getting Florida stated this year and being left out inexplicably. I think there's a lot of people that started pushing back on Kirk Herbstreit having, as the primo voice in this discussion, so much power in his ability to kind of shape the thought of and the concept of who gets positioned where and why. So
has
he's
been
just
replaced?
Out. I don't know yet. I haven't seen it.
Okay, because I haven't watched it, because I just look at,
well, it's just started this week. Like, this is the first week he's off.
I thought it was.
Well, I didn't watch last week, so maybe it was off last week.
Okay.
But either way, it was either last week, or I know on game day, Fowler said something about the Tuesday night selection show and was kind of pointing it at Kirk, and Kirk was like, I'm retired from that. And that was it. Like, that's all we've gotten. He just kind of disappeared. So, but the point here is, and I agree with Chris, and this is why I go back to, put a damn camera and a microphone in that room. Just record it. It's not that hard. Put it live on YouTube. You don't even have to take time out of ESPN's very busy schedule of letting Stephen A. Smith scream more about LeBron James at me. Okay?
All right. From what I can tell, the reason why he's off is because of Thursdays. And that's because of all the flying he has to do for game day, and then for doing the prime game, and that's too much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and I believe that.
I don't believe
your conspiracy theory.
All right. Listen, I'm not even going to sit here and try to pretend that I have any good evidence for this outside of this is what I think happened, but this is what I think happened. I think dude has taken so much pushback from fans that believe, and I think justifiably so, that he has got too much of an influence on what happens to who, when, and where, that they were like, yeah, we can't. We just can't with this. Blah, blah, blah. I think Chris is right. The problem is, from the beginning, they decided to go with a whole bunch of different phrases about who we're getting in. There's not. And for the record, I don't think there can be like a formula, like a set of rules, like a mathematical formula that says X gets you in and Y knocks you out. You can't do that. But I still would like to know the thought process on, even if it's a team by team, week by week basis. Hey, Colorado beat Utah, and as far as we're concerned, that is worth X amount of points, and that's why we, but just give me something. All right, back after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Just don't think you understand. And if you break my heart, my achy, breaky heart, it might blow up and kill this man. Ooh, ooh.
I don't think you can sing that properly without a mullet. And I think that's older than Cole. So,
oh, for sure. That's, yeah, that's 100% more. Like, I was a kid when Billy Ray Cyrus dropped not the banger of a generation, the banger of every generation.
The crossover hit that never should have happened.
What do you mean never should have happened? That song is just, it's yeah, it's definition of iconic. Great one. Definition of iconic. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Rob Brown Show on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob, the great one, Alonzo, with you here on the radio program. I would like to take you back to not too terribly long ago. In fact, I'd like to take you back to last year and play you a short little clip from a show called Inside the NBA on TNT. So that is that's the Inside the NBA on TNT gang talking about the reasons that they would never go to work for ESPN. Anyway, Inside the NBA is going to start airing on ESPN next year. The rights have been picked up, so the world's best studio sports show is on its way to the four-letter. After, of course, as has been pointed out a number of times, that TNT lost their rights to the NBA. And therefore, we're going to give up Inside the NBA on TNT, which, by the way, Zoe, is that not the worst damn idea of any broadcasting company that's ever happened aside from hiring me? Like, what a tragic decision that you had a show that was considered by, and I can't say everybody, but I can certainly say just about everybody I know, the best sports studio show on planet Earth. And you had it right there. All you had to do was put in a bid for the NBA. And I know you had to outbid ESPN to get it, but sometimes you got to spend a little money to make a little money to keep Chuck and Kenny and Shaq and Ernie together. You let it roll. And so not only did TNT allow ESPN to take the NBA away from them, now they have taken away the one property that made the NBA on TNT valuable: Ernie, Shaq, Kenny, and Chuck.
Here's the way to save the money. You drop the dead weight and you get rid of Kenny. He's the worst part of the show. He's like somewhere else when everybody else is right there. It's kind of embarrassing. All he can do is like run to the big screen. I mean, he could still do that.
I think you need Kenny. Let me tell you why I think you need Kenny. You got Ernie. Ernie's a moderator. Ernie, and by the way, maybe the best on TV.
And one of the best straight men of all time.
Sure.
Especially and underneath with the sarcasm. I mean, he's absolutely boom right there. Yeah.
And on top of that, at the risk of getting myself in trouble, Ernie got a little bit of brother in him that fits very well with Shaq. And they acknowledge this all the time. That's their words, not mine, right? They constantly quiz Ernie on like new age hip hop lyrics, and he gets them every time. He fits so well for that show. You got Shaq and Chuck, adversarial. That's why they put them on the opposite ends of the desk, so that they can butt heads without literally butting heads with each other. We had the other day Shaq calling out Chuck for wearing them TAJs, them tight-ass jeans. And I love it. The relationship between, but here's the problem. If you only have Shaq and Chuck talking basketball, they don't really talk basketball. They just hit each other the whole time. Kenny provides Ernie the opportunity to force the show back to actually being about basketball. He's not the straight man Ernie is. But what Kenny does do is be the prism that you can bring it back to basketball and make Shaq and Chuck come to Kenny as opposed to just being Shaq and Chuck and going off the rails for 4 hours every night.
All right, I predict the ESPN is going to ruin it. They're going to get rid of Kenny, and they're going to put one of their own in there.
I'll tell you how they ruin it. You want to know how they ruin it?
They'll put Stephen A. in there.
Or Perk. Or anybody.
Or Wilbon.
Or Wilbon.
Because he doesn't fit. But he doesn't fit with, you've already got that guy in Ernie. So you're adding Wilbon, and you've got another guy that's similar in their deliveries. And so, but ESPN classically adds somebody in, someone who's popular at the time. And I do think if there was a guy out, all joking aside, it would be Kenny.
Oh, for sure.
And they'll replace him with one of their own. I just don't know who it would be.
My biggest fear is that they would replace Kenny with a Kendrick Perkins or a Stephen A. Smith or somebody from their basketball talking head circle. And I'm going to keep it a buck. I don't mean to say this and come off as disrespectful. I won't say any of them are bad, but none of them are for me. Kenny fits for me because he's got just enough to play along with Chuck and Shaq, but still be, like I said, the prism that you can focus the show back into basketball with. Now, that's not to say there's not a guy out there that could fit in there. I think Kevin Garnett would slide into that chair and be great.
I'd be okay with that, but that's a whole lot of anger on that set if you throw Garnett in there.
I don't disagree, but also I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because Shaq and Chuck never stop laughing, right? I don't think it's a bad thing to maybe put the other end of the spectrum in there, but again, the problem you're going to bump into there is with Kenny, he's such a Diet Coke version of Shaq and Chuck that he can play along with the flavor, but still bring you back to the meat and potatoes of the show, which is talking basketball. There's just not a lot of guys that fit into that role. I'll tell you what I think happens. Actually, I take it back. I think if you slide the kid in there, I think if you slide Paul Pierce in there, because somebody, who was it, just mentioned Paul Pierce in there, whoever it was. You slide Paul Pierce in there. I think if you slide really anybody else in there, I think you throw the chemistry off. And I think you throw the chemistry off because you're going to end up with a guy that can't play along with the, pardon me using this word, silly, that is Chuck and Shaq, who can talk basketball, but you have to rein them back in a little bit, right? And I get it. Because I get told that about me all the time. Sometimes you got to rein me back in. I go on BetMGM tonight. I'll be on there tonight. New time tonight. I'm at 9:20 because I'm emceeing the Habitat for Humanity Gala this evening. I get on that show, and you just kind of go off on a tangent. Sometimes you got to get reined back in. Kenny is the perfect guy to rein Shaq and Chuck back in. And hey, have the fun. Make the ha-has. But let's keep it out on basketball. I don't know who else can do that role right now. Certainly nobody at ESPN, respectfully. KP can't do it. Wendy certainly can't do it.
Yeah, that would be who they'd throw in there. And what a train wreck that would be.
I don't think Wendy is bad. I just don't think his chemistry fits in with their chemistry.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
His sarcasm is, I don't know, it's kind of whiny. And I don't think that works.
Yeah, I don't think that chemistry fits. Joey B says ESPN had the right guy. It was J.J. Redick before he left to coach the Lakers. I actually agree. I think J.J. could slide in there because J.J. knows how to play along with the jokes and get the chuckles out, but dial it back to basketball. Kenny does a great job at that. Here's all I'm going to say. TNT, I mean this. You've made the biggest mistake that you have made since you became a broadcasting outlet by letting Inside the NBA on TNT go. Now Inside the NBA on ESPN is going to eat you alive. At night.
Only slightly lesser was how you handled WCW.
But, okay, yeah. That's fair. That's fair. All right, take a break. Come back. Wrap this bad boy up. Rob Alonzo and you, The Rob Brown Show, The Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It's The Fan Upstate. Rob, the great one, Lonzo, and you. Be a part of the radio broadcast, 844-FANFONE. That is the number to the renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas Fan Phone, 844-326 3663 is the number if you want to be a part of the show. You can also text us at 71307, 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, and we will read them on the radio show. Text 71307, text FAN, F-A-N. All right. I have a complaint to lodge. I would like to speak to a manager, please. I have a genuine, this isn't even a Karen complaint. This is a genuine complaint that I have to lodge immediately. Yesterday, on every college football show that I tuned into and paid attention to, they were talking about this Pop-Tarts Bowl news story. I don't know if you've seen this yet.
I have not. I've been looking forward to this all day, though.
Last year, the Pop-Tart Bowl had what they called an edible mascot. It wasn't. It was a regular mascot. And after the game was over, they put the edible mascot into a giant fake toaster, lowered him into the toaster, and out of the toaster slid a giant Pop-Tart. Now, it was a giant Pop-Tart, which was very cool, and I would want one.
What happened to his arms and his eyes and stuff? Did those melt off in the toaster?
I don't know what the lore was. And you know, as an out Dungeons and Dragons player and dungeon master, judge me as is appropriate. I'm a big believer in backstory. I'm a big believer in lore. I'm a big believer in created history to tell a wonderful story. And I asked the same question. Wait a minute. You lowered the giant Pop-Tart into a giant toaster, and he came out of the giant toaster still with a face attached, but with no arms and no legs. What happened to his arms and his legs? Did they melt off, as Lonzo asked? Were they hacked off in order to prevent whatever meat and muscle is inside of a giant Pop-Tart arm and or leg from accidentally being consumed by the players?
Maybe they got caught in those metal coils inside the toaster.
I think all valid questions that I'm sure somewhere on the internet, if you have the time and courage, you could probably go find some fan fiction written about if you wanted to. Yesterday, Pop-Tarts Bowl on X at Pop-Tarts Bowl sent out a tweet that said, "Breaking news, our edible mascot is back with a crazy good twist. This year, three flavors, wild berry, hot fudge sundae, and a mystery fan favorite flavor, headed back to shelves, will battle it out. And ultimately, one will be eaten by the Pop-Tarts Bowl champs." Now, here's what we know. We know that frosted strawberry has been eliminated from contention by the Pop-Tarts Bowl. In competition are frosted hot fudge sundae, frosted wild berry, and that special mystery flavor, which will be a previously discontinued edition of the Pop-Tarts brand, with potential options being peanut butter, vanilla milkshake, blue raspberry, cinnamon roll, red velvet cupcake, chocolate chip cookie dough, and grape. I don't know about you, Zoe. I'm all in for cinnamon roll.
I was going to say cinnamon roll. That stood out of all those for me.
Here is the problem that I have. They're not edible mascots. They are mascots, which I am then baited and switched into an actual Pop-Tart. If you want to be groundbreaking Pop-Tarts, then you have that mascot dance on over to the winning team and allow said winning team to rip off pieces of an actual edible mascot. Now, I will give the Pop-Tarts Bowl credit for one thing. They created my favorite meme of the 2023-2024 football season. When they, great one, lowered the Pop-Tart into a gigantic toaster while the Pop-Tart was holding up a sign that said, "Dreams do come true." I thought that was without a doubt the highlight moment of bowl season last year.
All right. Well, Lester is accusing you of cannibalism. No, because
I am not a Pop-Tart.
Yeah, I'm not a Pop-Tart either.
Yeah.
Neither are any of those players. Now, if a Pop-Tart ate a Pop-Tart, that would be cannibalism.
Correct. I am not a Pop-Tart. If the other Pop-Tart mascots begin to consume prematurely, and for the record, I think they should. If you're going to trot out 3 Pop-Tarts and have them compete for who it is that is going to be the last Pop-Tart mascot standing, and therefore the Pop-Tart mascot that has the honor of being consumed by the champion of the Pop-Tart Bowl, then I think you should have the Pop-Tarts consume the other Pop-Tarts to prove to us that they are truly the Pop-Tart that is deserved, justified to be consumed by the Pop-Tart Bowl champions.
Why does this not bother anyone that this is rooted in ritualistic death? It's like competing to be the one thrown in the volcano to hold off the gods or have a better harvest the next year. I mean, it's the same thing.
One of life's great mysteries, a mystery that I am unsure if there even is an answer, is what is the purpose of life? What is the purpose? And I think everybody philosophically comes to their own conclusion. Everybody decides, in my opinion, you decide what your purpose in life is. You decide what your purpose in life is. And that it is up to you whether or not you fulfill your purpose in life that only you can decide. My old man used to tell me all the time that his purpose in life was to be able to, the day that he took his last breath, look around and say to himself, honestly, I left the world a better place than I found it. And I have adopted that as my purpose in life. I would like to leave, and when I do, as my father did, have a ton of people show up at my funeral to party and have a great time and say, that man left this world a better place than he found it. That is my purpose in life. That is what is my goal, my long-term objective, is to leave a huge group of people crying in a room together, but out of happiness because I left the world a better place than I found it. A Pop-Tart's purpose in life is to be consumed. That is its purpose. It has one purpose. Its purpose is to be consumed. And the size and consciousness of the Pop-Tart is irrelevant to the Pop-Tart's ultimate objective, ultimate goal. The Pop-Tart's purpose, whether it is sentient or not, is to be consumed and provide sustenance. So I can't imagine that these Pop-Tarts are willing to do anything less than fight to the death for the honor of being consumed by the Pop-Tarts Bowl champions. Because their objective, their number one objective in life, is to be consumed and provide sustenance. And if that is your number one objective, if your only goal is to be consumed and provide sustenance, then you, as a Pop-Tart, must be willing to eliminate other Pop-Tarts in order to reach your primary objective. And there is no Pop-Tart that will be consumed in a more glorious manner, in a manner that is worthy of being sung about and have tall tales told about into infinity, than the Pop-Tart that lays down its life to give sustenance to the Pop-Tart champion. I want a Pop-Tart battle royale to the death between these 3 Pop-Tarts. I want these 2 Pop-Tarts. I want the Pop-Tart that is ultimately going to be lowered into a gigantic toaster and then slid out of the side and then turned into a million little pieces to be consumed by 100 college football players who have just gotten done trying to etch their names into the history books of the Pop-Tarts Bowl. I want those Pop-Tarts willing to take each other out. That Pop-Tarts, that is how you earn a lifelong customer.
That just reminds me that Gladiator 2 comes out this week. I don't know why. All right, the first thing that's Xing is Kim Kardashian.
That might be the dumbest segment I've ever done. I think I nailed it, the record.
Yeah.
I think I nailed it, but that might be the dumbest segment I've ever done. Kim Kardashian, who I have to say, hate that she is famous, hate why she is famous, hate that she is famous. I met her once. She's like the nicest person. She genuinely was very, very nice. I met her when she was dating Reggie Bush the year after the Saints won the Super Bowl. After week one, we all end up at a club called Club Republic in New Orleans, Louisiana. She showed up. She was super duper sweet. It's been frustrating hating Kim Kardashian because she was so, so, so ridiculously nice to me. I don't know why she's trending. I'm assuming she got naked somewhere again.
No, she's got a robot.
She got a robot?
Yeah, she's got a robot.
Did she get one of those
robot
friend? Like a Google robot?
It's a big robot. Yes, I believe it's, it might have been a Tesla robot. I don't know if they
You can say what you want, Zoe, but it is a Tesla robot. I'm looking at it now. If I can get a Tesla robot that comes into my house and does all the things I don't want to do, hey, I would name him Robert the Robot.
Of course.
I would be like, hey, Robert. Here's what I need. I need you to go do my laundry, fold my laundry, put my laundry away. Then I need you to dust, sweep, and vacuum every square inch of this house. And then I need you to bake me a cake. And if that robot, Robert the Robot, could do those things for me, Zoe, you're telling me you don't want that in your house? I do. I do. Sorry, Will Smith from the 2017 acclaimed iRobot. I want that robot.
All right. Here's the thing. I think I'd rather have the robot here at work at first, you know, so I can see what it does here before I am willing to take it home.
I mean, listen, if you're telling me, and here's the reality, the dystopian future is that every job is replaced by a robot.
Yeah.
It's a dystopian. Now, the utopian future is that every job is replaced by a robot. No one ever has to work, and everybody has the opportunity to just live out their life doing whatever they want to do whenever they want to do it, which sounds amazing to me. That's the utopian future. The dystopian future is that there's like 20 guys that own everything and the robots do everything and they just have all the stuff and they become supreme chancellors of the world. That's the dystopian future. The utopian future for me is that I never have to wash and fold laundry again. I am willing to risk global world peace into the foreseeable future if I never have to fold my own boxer briefs again.
There you go. All right. So we know you're getting one. All right. The next thing that is Xing is Seth Rollins.
Seth freaking Rollins is Xing because he was very involved in last night's Monday Night Raw when Jimmy J and Sammy approached him yet a second time asking him to be the fifth member of their team for War Games, which he said no to. Then he said, but I will go out there and eliminate Bronson Reed so that he doesn't make it to War Games. Well, then the new tribal chief, Solo Sikoa, interfered. And now the thought is Seth Rollins will join Team OTC. However, I don't think that's going to happen.
Little minor thing to look at. He frosted his tips again, and he brought back the curb stomp last night.
And, of course, we all know the origination of those two Seth Rollins classics.
Finally, the last thing that's Xing, I want to make sure I get this in.
Yep.
Is Beans.
Beans?
Yes.
Like the character from Even Stevens in the 1990s?
No, I think it's the magical fruit.
The more you eat,
the more you toot. Yes.
The more you toot, the better you feel. So eat your beans at every meal. I don't know how we ended there.
I don't know why beans are trending, but they are.
It is what it is. Hey, you guys have a lovely rest of your day. Don't drink and drive. I will punch you in the face. We'll see you back here tomorrow to do it all over again, but better on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Later!